This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call and SportsMap Radio. As we've been chronicling all morning, the quarterback saga in the NFL got a lot more interesting yesterday. Oh, boy, do people want to rip Daniel Jones in that contract. $40 million a year. I know it's easy to do, kids. I know it's easy to do. But I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. I think if you are a starting quarterback in this league, get as much money as you can, and you hang on to the desperation of the team that is making the negotiation on the other side. They want Daniel Jones. It's going to cost you. And you know what? As we've been saying, and a lot of people are pointing this out, this is the universal feeling about this money. If you look at Daniel Jones and you go, wow, he only threw 15 touchdowns this past season. And it's not like the Giants were Super Bowl contenders like Jalen Hurts was with the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, the Giants made the playoffs and that's awesome. And they won a playoff game and that's great. And it looks like they're building something pretty cool. But the reality of it is $40 million. That's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. Again, if Daniel Jones can get that kind of money, it is going to raise and elevate the contracts of other guys who are better. But when this is said and done, he's going to be about the 10th, maybe 11th, 12th highest paid quarterback in the league by the time this contract runs to the end. And that's where you'd probably have Daniel Jones on your list of QBs. So it's about in the ballpark of where his contract lies to where you think he is in the hierarchy of QBs. Now, when we get to 4 years, you're going to have to take quarterbacks that are on rookie deals and push them out. So you might get an Anthony Richardson who's like wowing the NFL in his rookie contract, but he won't count. When you look at it, you talk about quarterbacks that got contracts, quarterbacks that got paid. Where is Daniel Jones on that list a couple of years down the road? And I guarantee you he will be in around the vicinity of where you peg him as a starting quarterback who have contracts, who are not on rookie deals where they're playing for no money and doing great things. I sense that that's where that is. And that, to me, makes a lot more sense than just looking at it as a raw number and putting it on the scale of, well, if you're going to give him $40 million, what's on the other end of the scale? And the other end of the scale is a dual-threat quarterback with 15 touchdown passes that didn't lead a team anywhere near a Super Bowl but got them into the playoffs. Okay, that's about right. That's about right. But, of course, the big story, there's two other big stories, the franchise tag landing on Lamar Jackson. We've been talking about how that could affect future contracts down the line. And what does Lamar Jackson want to do? Does he want to stand on the principal or does he want to, all right, acquiesce from the principal and get a deal that's big but not fully guaranteed? The other story, of course, is the New York Jets and their desperation to land a legitimate starting quarterback to capitalize on the amazing young talent that they have gone out to California to talk to Aaron Rodgers. And they landed at the airport. They were met by Rodgers at the airport. It was not far from his house. And there was four guys, including Nathaniel Hackett, who he worked in Green Bay, who's the new Jets offensive coordinator. And they all talked to him. Now, what does this mean? The Packers needed to allow this to happen. Okay? The Jets can't just fly out and talk to Aaron Rodgers without a tampering charge. This had to have been approved by the Green Bay Packers. So what does it say about the Green Bay Packers in their relationship to Aaron Rodgers? If the Packers were absolutely like, you are either going to play for us or you are going to retire from this league, they would not have allowed the Jets to do this. If that was the firm stand by the Packers, because remember, there's a little leverage on both sides between Rodgers and the Packers. The Packers have his contract rights. Rodgers could retire. So Packers could get no Rodgers, but nobody gets Rodgers. They could get Rodgers playing, or they could get something for Rodgers playing for somebody else. Those are the three options, okay? So the first option is Aaron Rodgers retires. Well, then nobody has anything to worry about, right? The Packers move on with Jordan Love, which is what they're kind of signaling that they want to do anyway, and nobody gets Aaron Rodgers, right? And Rodgers gets no money. The second thing is he plays for the Packers. This is a stand that Green Bay can make to Aaron Rodgers. This is a statement that they can say to him. Well, here's the deal, Aaron. If you want to be an NFL quarterback and make the $60 million that we are going to give you on this contract, you have to play for us. And that's it. Nobody else. So you're playing for us or you're not playing at all. Your decision. Or now this becomes interesting. The Packers go, yeah, if you'd like to retire, nobody gets you. If you'd like to play, you can play for us, $60 million. Or we can work out a trade with somebody else and you can get a new look and a fresh start. somewhere else, and then we can get on with Jordan Love. What would you like us to do? Is this a signal that the third one is the primary option in the Packers camp? Not really, because nothing has been talked about in terms of a trade. Nothing has been talked about in terms of how the Jets would compensate the Packers for Aaron Rodgers and all what the contract means and all that good stuff. The Packers could still hold tight and say, yeah, you know, I know the Jets came out to visit you and I hope you had a good lunch, but the reality is you're playing for us. Right? They could still do that. But the Jets are making the push. And now if you're the Jets, here's the thing. You know, in the city of New York, the spotlight is on, the microscope is on, everybody's going to be digging at this story. They're going to be asking what was talked about. They're going to try to find any sort of angle to get any information on how the Jets were doing. What did the Jets say? How did they say it? What did they present themselves to Aaron Rodgers as coming to New York? Well, the one thing that they have is New York in and of itself. It is different than any place in the world. It is one of the more unique sports media cities in the world. Right? There is way more scrutiny. There's way more conversation. There's a lot more entitlement to New York fans than you get in other cities. Like I remember, you know, having grown up in the Northeast, right? I have listened, you know, my early foray into sports broadcasting was listening to Boston media and New York media. I could get the New York stations in my house in New Hampshire on my radio in my bedroom. So I would listen late at night to guys like Steve Summers on WFAN talking in the night. And I would listen, of course, to the Boston radio hosts as I was sort of growing. When I became a full-time host, I was in Denver. And I kind of thought Denver was like anybody else, like anywhere else. And that wasn't true. Because what I heard in Boston and New York was over and over again was this sort of relationship between fan and team, which was, you better be doing the things I want you to do, right? Like, it wasn't like, I'm just so thankful you're here. I'm just so thankful that you're playing football in my city. You can do whatever you want. There was like this love, passionate relationship between the fan and the team in Boston and New York that also meant you got mad at it. That you got angry at it, that you got really upset at it, that you demand people and you'll be fired. When I went to Denver, there were some people like that, but there were a lot of people very cautious because they didn't want to sound like they weren't a fan. They would call the show and say like, well, you know, they're doing the best they can. And I'd be like, that's not good enough. They need a quarterback and blah, 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 blah. So New York is a special medium. I always tell the story about Mark McGwire. Remember when Mark McGwire was hitting a bunch of home runs?
Yeah.
Right? So he's going around city to city to city. It was a New York AP reporter that asked him about the bottle of Andrew Steendine. Nobody else noticed it. Like, it was in his locker and he wasn't hiding it. And it was an AP reporter from New York that went, what's that? And that's when we found out about Andrew Steendine. They have that level. They treat sports teams like covering politics. Like, they're doing the public good by exposing free agent talks and trade talks mm-hmm. and contract negotiations. They treat it like there's a secret deal in the back room of a Senate to secure funds for a new highway.
And they always sound like they hate you.
Right, exactly.
They don't. They're just doing their job.
And I would notice it when I covered the Rockies. I used to cover about 35 to 40 games a year, sometimes half the season for this not only my station, but I was like wire services and stuff. So I was freelancing with two other guys. So we split up the season, but I was at Rockies games all the time. And I would notice for example, Houston would come and there would be like two or three people waiting to get into the visiting locker room. When the Padres would come, a couple of people waiting to get in the visiting locker room. I used to always do the visiting locker room quotes. My friend would do the home quotes. And so I got to see every visiting team, every visiting manager. And then the Yankees would come in or the Mets would come in. And it would be like a line of people from every newspaper, from magazines, from New Jersey, Connecticut, the larger region. Radio traveled with the team. Like it was nuts. Like a regular season game in Denver warranted a traveling party of like 12 people. Like it was crazy, all the amount of media that would show up. So if you're Aaron Rodgers, you know what you're walking into if you'd agree to become the Jets quarterback. But you also know that there's another side to that, which is an elevated greatness that just automatically comes by being attached to the city.
Yeah.
And that's something.
It's a fine line to maneuver because you could flop completely.
Right. Exactly.
And they know that, and New York is the hardest city. I mean, they will let you know in
they
a
will
second.
Let you know it. They will let you know it in a second. And that's the deal. There, you know what?
You could sense
that there are some people in Green Bay, not everybody, because like when I said, those passionate fans in New York and Boston, they are everywhere, right? There is a fan base that always feels like, what have you done for me lately?
Mm-hmm.
But you can almost sense a appreciative, warm feeling to anybody that plays for the Packers in Green Bay. It's a small market. Yes, it's a larger situation in Wisconsin and Milwaukee, but that's not New York, right? That's not New York. That's not the warm and fuzzies aren't in New York. It's like, you're here. Congratulations. Thank you for being a Jet. But now here's the deal. We got to go beat Buffalo. So now we're going to go beat Buffalo and Miami too. And we got to win this division. We got to get the Super Bowl.
And I want you to embarrass the Patriots, please.
And that's it. And that's right. And if you can embarrass the Patriots by beating them 56-3, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah.
Right? So that's what he was up against. But people are right about this. This is not hyperbole. If he wins a Super Bowl in New York, he does elevate his already Hall of Fame status. Because the Jets have been fighting this for 54 years, right? I mean, they have been fighting this for a long time, trying to find the next Joe Namath, the next Broadway Joe. They have done it with so many different players that have not come close to getting that Jets team to a Super Bowl. They appeared in two AFC championship games within the last 15 years, but not on the level of what the other teams did in the conference. So that is a story for Aaron Rodgers getting visited by the Jets brass, who are desperate to land.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. So yesterday, big news again in the NFL. Big East Conference Tournament coming up. We are going to have, we're going to have Zach Braziller. I hope that you pronounce his name. It's kind of a cool name. Braziller from the New York Post.
I don't think there's another way to do it unless the R is silent.
Yeah, unless he goes, everything's silent and it's Smith.
Right.
Oh, okay. Or I'm just everything is silent. Zach The B-R-A-Z-I-L-L are all silent.
What if he went to you and said, yeah, Braziller is pronounced Wilson.
Yeah, right. Exactly. He's covering the tournament at Madison Square Garden. This is a conference that's got Marquette atop. They've got Xavier. They've got Creighton, UConn, Providence, Villanova taking a step back now that Jay Wright is gone. St. John's is in that mix as well. Butler, you know. So nevertheless, we'll talk to him about the Big East tournament. There's a Power Six in college basketball. So you do the normal Power Five, and then you add the Big East to it. So there you go. So we'll talk to him about that coming up. Big 12 going on. You've got the Big 10 going on in Chicago. So this is a very fun time of year. Nevertheless, we were just talking about poor Merrimack. They won their conference tournament, but they did not get in because of the rule. But Gonzaga did win its conference tournament last night. They beat St. Mary's, did so pretty well as they are now winning that one. They were getting a bid anyway, but it's also nice to sort of wrap it up in the conference. You know, so
that makes like all of them in a row for Gonzaga now?
Yeah, pretty much, right? Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's it. Mountain West Conference Tournament also starts today in Las Vegas. The ACC tournament is going on right now. It will be later today, but they went on yesterday. You had Georgia Tech winning its opening game, Boston College winning its opening game. Pac-12 tournament starts today as well. SEC tournament starts. South Carolina got to play Ole Miss in like the, yeah, you guys really don't deserve to be here, but we created a day for you, part of the tournament. That's always the worst, right? When you ever see a tournament bracket of these conference tournaments, and they've got like a full day of basketball, like on, let's say, a Wednesday, right? Like a Wednesday. You look at a Wednesday, it's like, these are four games, two in the afternoon and two in the evening. But it kind of starts the day before with these two games of teams that, like, we had to invite because they're part of the conference. Like, you have to play this extra game, like a play-in game. Like, no one's going to be here. No one's really going to care. And if you win, you get to be in the big party over here. Like, see this list? You get to be in this. South Carolina is in that part of the bracket. South Carolina is playing Ole Miss. Ole Miss fired their head coach, Kermit Davis, in the middle of the season. Well, towards the end of the season, but still, number of games left. And Ole Miss, and South Carolina is under the first year of Lamont Paris. So they didn't have a very good year. Nevertheless, they get to play in this game where the winner advances to face, I don't know, Auburn or Alabama. I don't care. Tennessee, I guess. I don't know. But nevertheless, I'm not really counting. I don't know who's going to win that game. They both stink. But the Big East tournament, we'll talk about that coming up. But the big news is in the NFL, Saquon Barkley got franchise tagged. Now, he is going to make a little over $10 million in the franchise tag. He turned down a deal that would have paid him 12 to 13. He's going to be franchise tagged at 10. Now, we talked about this yesterday, but whenever I see that, I always go, there's two sides to this angle of running backs. One, making $10 million a year doing anything is unbelievable money, right? It's great money. You're a millionaire. There's really nothing you can't buy. You can buy a couple houses. You're rich. You do pay a lot. Your agent gets a cut. Your personal management team gets a cut. Everybody gets a little piece, right? You take care of certain people in your family. Of course, Uncle Sam gets its share, especially when you live in New Jersey and New York. But at the same time, it's still very good money. But do you think there is a little bit of, wow, it ends up not being the life-changing money at this position? Like, this is money that's good, but I may have to get a TV job when it's done to keep up the lifestyle. Whereas Daniel Jones, his buddy on the team, is now getting at least $100 million guaranteed out of this deal for the next 4 years. $100 million guaranteed. Hopefully he'll play all 4 years and get the full 160, but at least $100 million of it is guaranteed. That's got to be a little bit of that's a lot of work. You get hit on every time you touch the ball, except only on touchdown runs and maybe going out of bounds. But other than that, you're pretty much hit every time you touch the ball. You go through incredible pain, training, right? There's always somebody coming up that's a little younger, a little tick faster. You don't have job security, and they don't pay you like other positions in the sport. And yet, you're not as critical as you used to be. But find me a team that doesn't want to have a running game. Like, if you went around to all the offensive coordinators and said, can you just win in this league throwing the ball? They'd be like, of course not. You have to have some running game, right? Yeah. Is it important? Yeah. Is it the most important thing? No. But it's important, right? Yeah. And yet, $10 million is nothing to sneeze at, but it's not $25 million. It's not $15 million. It's not $22 million. So Saquon Barkley is in a position that they've just devalued over. That's the power of this league, man. They have devalued it. A lot of it is, again, supply and demand. If you have coaches that are figuring out ways to get better value with younger players, and let's be honest, a running back is not a position you get better with age, right? You may get a little savvier. You may understand defenses a little better. But every year on a running back's life that gets ticked off, then they get less and less productive. Now, quarterbacks, you could say you could get better with age, right? Quarterbacks, you get more seasoned, you get more experience.
Like fine wine.
Like fine wine. You can be a better quarterback at 28 than you were at 22. You better be a better quarterback at 28 than you were at 22.
Usually, right? And yeah, you're right. Usually you are. Like, yeah. I mean, you know, put it into the Lamar Jackson perspective, right? He's going to be a better quarterback in a couple of years.
Right, exactly.
Than he is right now.
Right. Yeah, the more experience you get, the more defenses you see, the more, like, hey, we can do this against them, we can't do this against them. Peyton Manning used to talk about this all the time. Peyton Manning had a memory like an encyclopedia book. So Peyton Manning would remember a defensive set that Bill Belichick ran, like, he talked about this when he was in the AFC title game against the Patriots. He said, like, I remembered a defensive scheme that they used against me when I was with the Colts. Like, that was, like, that's incredible. You're supposed to, you don't necessarily have to have that kind of photographic memory, but you are supposed to be seasoned enough. When you just run the football, yeah, again, you can get a little bit more creative, like how, you, whatever. But you are falling downwards the older you get, right? And so it's got to be a little difficult to notice that, hey man, you know, like this is good money, but it's not Like, my buddy just got exponentially more money than I did. He didn't just get more money. He got quadruple the money than I get. I'm going to play on $10 million, and he's getting $40 million. And everybody's been talking about how us, we're the dynamic duo. This isn't even Batman and Robin. This is Batman and Alfred. I mean, goodness gracious. I mean, I don't even get to wear a superhero cape with that kind of money.
No, in fact, I'm paying him.
Right? Yeah, exactly. I'm paying him. Right? I mean, that's the difference between the two, right? That's like everybody thinks it's like me and Daniel Jones. It's not me and Daniel. It's Daniel Jones, and I'm part of the sideshow, right? I'm the warm-up act. $40 million to 10?
And if nothing was more apparent than was that if they couldn't come up with a deal before the deadline, they were going to tag Daniel Jones and go, Saquon, good luck.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Good luck.
I mean,
if they couldn't work out the deal, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, look, and I'm not trying to wax poetically on the importance of the running back position. I get it, right? I get it. But you're also talking about a guy who's like the best players in the league were the running backs. Like the running backs when I was growing up were very, very, very important. And I know the West Coast offense sort of opened things up a little bit more, and we sort of more transitioned to more dynamic game. And the more the rules allowed the protection of the quarterback and the protection of the wide receivers, you're just going to open up the passing game a lot more.
But even the team that like really perfected the West Coast offense, and I'll go to the Niners, right? We knew their running back.
Yeah, sure we did.
And it was the same running back year after year after year. You know, it was Roger Craig. And
Roger
then
Craig.
When it wasn't Roger Craig, it became Ricky Waters.
That's right. We still knew them. Yeah.
Now, I can barely tell you. I can't even tell you who the running back is of a bunch of teams.
Yeah. And you're now finding that, again, like I was telling you yesterday, they're already talking about shopping Derrick Henry here, which means, again, if you're talking about shopping Derrick Henry, you either A, philosophically are blowing it up, or you're just saying we're done, or you're making a transition to going, you know what, that's not going to win in the AFC. That, like, us holding the ball and driving Derrick Henry down a defense's throat and moving the chains and you know, battling the trenches, we're not going to be doing that's not a winning formula to compete against Burrow and Allen and Mahomes and Herbert and everybody else in the and even Trevor Lawrence in our own division. That's a big admission if they indeed are shopping Derrick Henry around, because they can get by with a mediocre quarterback or a B-plus quarterback in a conference of A-pluses, but without Derrick Henry they can't. They can't do that without Derrick Henry. They have to change the entire philosophy. Big East tournament going on in Madison Square Garden. We'll preview it next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, you know, every now and then we do go back in time and sort of remember certain eras, and I, like some of you, remember a Big East Conference tournament that was probably one of the best tournaments that you had, and it's still now up there. It's still got some very, very good teams, but you know, we miss some and we add some, and the Big East tournament continues on in New York City. Zach Brazilier joins us, New York Post, to talk about the Big East Conference and the tournament that is going to be underway. How are you, my friend?
Hey, what's up, man? How are you?
Good. On a Progressive guest line, drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. All right, we always start off with sort of a general primer. How deep is this conference? How far does it go from teams that are going to make the tournament coming up on Selection Sunday?
You know, it's five teams are going to make the tournament. Creighton, UConn, Xavier, Providence, and Marquette. Villanova has really come on of late. Justin Moore getting healthy. You know, people think they have a shot to be a potential bid stealer. They have played well. And then, you know, after that, it really falls off. You know, Seton Hall, first year, Shaheed Holloway. It's going to take some time. St. John's is probably looking at coaching change with Mike Anderson. The Paul Georgetown Butler are just not very good. But look, I think the top 5 to 6 teams in this league are really good, and I think it's going to be a really good, you know, tournament once we get past the opening night.
Let's talk about Villanova when Kyle Neptune takes over the retirement of Jay Wright. Obviously, we anticipate a transition and what that transition means. Players come and go in college sports. Players come and go with transfer portal. But nevertheless, what was Villanova's obstacles? How did they overcome it to sort of get to a position where they are playing pretty good basketball?
Well, probably their two most talented players are Justin Moore and Cam Whitmore. Whitmore is a freshman, a projected lottery pick. He missed the first month with a thumb injury, and it took him some time. Moore tore his Achilles last March, so he really didn't come back until about the end of January, and it took him some time to really start to be the player that everyone knows he can be. So with those two guys kind of now getting going, Nolan Hope has been much better. You know, they've played really, really well. You know, they lost their last game of the year to UConn, but before that, they had really been on a roll, beating some good teams. And now, look, I think Villanova has a chance to make a run here. You know, they have a very talented team. I think people jumped the gun a little with Kyle Neptune saying he wasn't doing a good job. It's just, look, he's not Jay Wright. He's not a Hall of Famer yet, but I think he's a very good coach. He did a good job in 1 year at Fordham. He's been able to keep this team together, you know, early in the year when nothing was going right. And look, let's see what he can do here at the Big East tournament.
I've sort of attached myself to this Marquette team. I have no idea why, but I did about mid-January. What has Shaka Smart got? He's got Kyler Kolick, who's fantastic, Cam Jones as well. What is Marquette? How good are they nationally?
Marquette's terrific. You know, they have the fourth-ranked offense, you know, efficiency offense in the country. They're, despite the fact they play so fast, they're plus 5.5 turnover margin. Kolick is absolutely fantastic. Cam Jones is really good. They have really good supporting players. The one issue they have is their thin up front. They really don't have a true five. UConn really handled them inside twice this year. That's the one issue. If we get to the NCAA tournament and they face a team that's really physical inside, I could see them having trouble. But look, they're a team that really can shoot the three. They play really good defense. They're physical on the perimeter. The one issue, though, is that interior where you can hurt them.
Yeah. There's always these conference tournaments. There's always the team that's desperate enough but talented enough to really make some noise. If you were to look at this Big East tournament, does Seton Hall fit that bill?
Yeah, look, Seton Hall's played well of late. The one issue with them is their point guard, Kadari Richmond, has got a back issue, and he's really not sure if he's going to be able to play. Now, look, they're coming off a really good win at Providence. They played a very close game with Villanova before that. They have played much better of late. I do like the draw. They get the Paul first round, they're going to win that game. Then they get a Xavier team that doesn't have Zach Fremantle, and I think that it's going to be a very competitive game. I wouldn't be shocked to see Seton Hall win that game. I just don't know if any. I just don't think more than that is realistic. They're probably going to get Creighton after that, and it's hard to see them beating Creighton. Creighton, just to me, is just too good for them. But look, they're playing well. They're probably going to make the NIT, and who knows? Maybe they can get to Friday night here.
You mentioned Fremantle. Talk about the Xavier team and Sean Miller without him.
Yeah, they're 6-3 without him. Jerome Hunter stepped into the starting lineup. Fremantle, it's a shame. He was playing so well. Yeah. He was really strong bounce back year after last season. And look, it clearly hurts them. They're not as good. They're not as deep. They're not as talented. But Hunter is a really good player. He probably is different from Fremantle. He's not maybe as offensively talented, but he is tough. He can defend. He'll bang inside. I still like Xavier a lot. The backcourt of Boom and Jones is as good as there is in the country. Sean Miller is obviously a really good coach. I feel like he's done a very good job this year. But losing Fremantle definitely hurts and, to me, lowers their ceiling a little bit.
Let's continue to look at some of these different teams. Creighton, Greg McDermott's team, what are the Blue Jays?
Yeah, you know, their overall record isn't great, but part of that was their center, Ryan Kalkbrenner, missed a lot of time in the non-conference. They lost six games. They really had a tough non-conference schedule. They've been much better in league play. They don't have any really much depth. 85% of their scoring comes from the starting lineup. So that is one thing to watch, especially in this tournament where you have to play three games in as many days to win it. And if you're playing close games, you can see some, you know, wear and tear. You can see, you know, they can get fatigue could set in as we get deeper into this tournament. But I love Kalkbrenner. He's the Big East Defensive Player of the Year. He's a tremendous rim protector, good rebounder, really scores the ball well inside. They have, you know, the scoring depth, five guys averaging in double figures. I just worry about that depth, you know, in terms of the bench.
UConn starts off good, obviously, with non-conference schedules, then gets a little scary a little bit around January, and then started to pick up steam. How about the Huskies?
Yeah, I mean, you can make the argument that no one's playing better in the league than them right now. They've won five straight. They're coming off a really nice win at Villanova. You know, they really are starting to look like that team they looked like before the league season started. I think Jordan Hawkins is a first-round pick. Sonogo is obviously tremendous. Andre Jackson Jr. is now starting to play with more confidence on offense. And when he plays well, they're really, really tough to beat. I like them a lot. I picked them to win the tournament. They actually have the betting. They're actually the betting favorite of this tournament, which is kind of funny for the number four seed. I like them to win the tournament. I think they're definitely a second weekend team. I do see UConn having a big March. I do.
Is that a statement about how close we talk about this conference, how close it is from one, say, down to six or seven? I mean, how deep does it go in terms of teams that really could win this thing?
I think it's six deep. I don't see anyone beyond the five teams that are going to make the NCAAs and Villanova as a bid stealer. I don't think Seton Hall or St. John's can win this tournament. I think the high, you know, maybe one of those teams could pull an upset and get to the semis, but I don't see anything more than that for those teams. So I think it's six. I think it's six teams that can win the tournament. I really would have liked Villanova if they had a better draw. I just have a hard time seeing them beating Creighton in the quarterfinals. I just don't like the matchup for Villanova. But yeah, look, I would not count them out with the way Moore is playing. So, but yeah, five definite, six as, you know, as a long shot. But I don't think you're looking at more than that.
This is a conference that's got some really good players and some good coaches here. Is there a style of Big East basketball for people who are just going to be tuning in? Maybe they only catch this time of year. Is there a style of Big East basketball? Or is it just completely, well, you got one team that does bigs, one team that does guard play, one team that's fast, one team that's slow. Is it all over the place, or is there a consistent style to the top teams in this conference?
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's a consistent style. I do think it's a fun brand of basketball. You see a lot of the best teams in the league are really high-scoring teams. Marquette, Creighton, Xavier, UConn to an extent. So, yeah, I do think it is fun basketball. I think it's easy on the eyes. Now, this year is a little different. You know, usually the league has more depth. You know, usually the seventh or eighth team or ninth team are a little better than they are this year. But I think that the top is better than usual, too. You know, you have teams like UConn's going to be, to me, is a three seed. Marquette is a two or three seed. Xavier is a four seed at worst, in my opinion. So I think the top is better than usual, and maybe the bottom isn't quite as good.
Zach Brazilier, Dan, New York Post on the Big East Tournament, Madison Square Garden. Good talking to you, my friend. Thank you for the insight of what I think is one of the more fun tournaments of the week.
Hey, my pleasure. Anytime.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. This is, again, maybe it's going back to the days of teams no longer there, but I love Big East basketball. And I'm telling you, I'm watching Shaka Smart and Marquette. I have no idea while I'm lassoing them into this thing, but I really like Tyler Kolek. I like Cam Jones. I like Marquette. I like Shaka Smart. I too bad it didn't work out at Texas, but I do remember his VCU team from about 12 years ago. All right, it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio as we continue.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. And thanks to Zach Brazilier on the Big East Tournament this weekend in Madison Square Garden. I'm kind of hoping, I want Marquette to go deep because I want to be proven right, but I kind of don't, because I kind of want to be like, okay, now I don't have to be attached to it. That's my little sleeper team, man. That's the team I like. Do you have one yet? Are you going to pick one? Because I'm not going to do this alone when we get to the tournament.
No, I haven't. I know we're definitely going to go. I'm definitely filling out a bracket.
Yeah, but I don't mean that. I mean, who's your team? Like, who do you go? You know, that's a team I like.
Kennesaw State. No, I'm just kidding.
Fairleigh Dickinson.
Merrimack.
The people that got it from Merrimack. Yeah.
I haven't. I got to dive into it. I got to really look at it. I mean, I don't want to go with a traditional. You know, I don't want to go with like Alabama or Houston. You know,
right?
Like,
but why not Houston? You should take Houston. They're your city's team.
It's not my city. It's the city I live in. It's team.
Right. That's true. It's like me rooting for Vanderbilt.
I'm just occupying space here.
I'm to root for Vanderbilt.
No, I would love to see. It's not really an upset, but I like seeing lower seeds win. And I'm not talking like, you know, in the teens. I'm talking like
you're talking like 7-8s.
Yeah, or you know, I'm not even going down that far. I'm like 4s and
4 or 5s. Yeah.
5s, because I mean, there's so much parity in college basketball now that there's really no difference between a 4 and a 1.
It really doesn't matter. I used to make, you know, that's one of the killers of the regular season is like your urgency in the regular season is to make the tournament or seeding. And if it's seeding, you're not really losing sleep. I've never met one fan that panicked because their team was seeded fourth when it should have been third. Like if you are that fan, stop doing that. You don't have to do that. But if you are a team like that's on the bubble, right? If you're a team like you said, like, you know, Villanova or like Providence and you're on the bubble, Mississippi State. Those are like now you start going, okay, these are valuable games. I got to start winning some games. I need to bump up my resume. That's when you get a little bit of that, you know, creeping in. But if you just scan bracketwag.com, Shelby Mass site, it's really fun because he'll give you like he has them color coded in his current bracket. So he updates the bracket constantly. And if you notice in his bracket, if you're a blue colored team, that means you've clinched a spot in the tournament. That means you won your conference tournament and you're in. So if you're Northern Kentucky or UNC Asheville or Kennesaw State or Drake, but you're all at the bottom. It means that these conference tournaments produce winners and automatic bids, but nobody's higher than 12th in Shelby Mackett's Mass mind, right? We'll see what the committee does with them. But in Shelby Mass' view, none of them are 12. Everybody's 12 or below except Gonzaga, who won yesterday, and he puts them on the 3 line. So the real teams that – yeah, they're pretty much like Marquette's guaranteed to be in. Indiana's guaranteed to be in. Don't know what they'll do in the tournament. They don't have to win. Even if they get upset in the first round, they're in because their resume is that solid. But he's got teams like Auburn, North Carolina State, Penn State, Arizona State, Wisconsin, Nevada, Mississippi State, Providence. These are these bubble teams, and they're in dangerous positions because even if they get in, they're the 11th, 10th spot. But if you're TCU – and you get a 5 seed out of the don't lose.
I wonder.
Sleep over
you know,
that.
I mean, here's you know what I might go for. I might root for Rutgers.
Rutgers, sure. Right Scarlet now, Knights.
Right now, they're the first four out
in Piscataway, New Jersey.
Yeah, they're the first four out, but the NCAA did make a positive rule.
Okay,
rule change or game change on their behalf that the game they had against Ohio State should have been a win.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. I remember that.
And the NCAA said, you know, or the tournament committee said that they will consider that a quad one road win for Rutgers.
That's good. That's a good statement.
When moving forward. So maybe they get into the tournament and they'll be like, all right, Rutgers, you got your lifeline. Let's see what you can do with it.
I might be butchering this, so please forgive me. Maybe Philip can help me on Twitter. Didn't this happen in football in a similar way to Oklahoma State?
Did it?
Weren't they playing a couple of years ago? They were playing a game, I think, against like Central Michigan, and the referees screwed up the clock, and Central Michigan won the game, and then they realized they had made an error, and Oklahoma State should have won that game. They won it like on a last second touchdown, but they should have never gotten the play. And then there was this conversation like, if you're on the committee, what do you do with this? Because Oklahoma State started winning games after that. And they were in the conversation of being a playoff team. I don't think they ended up there, but you know they didn't make the playoff. But I think in the end they lost some games that kind of knocked them out. But there was a conversation like, if you're a voter, do you take it as is? Like, sorry, you got screwed over, but that's just the way it is. Or do you say, wait a minute, no, the circumstances of that game were wrong, and we should consider you in that. And I think that's I'm glad the NCAA did that for Rutgers because sometimes if you just leave it up to the selection committee, they go, well, there's nothing we can do about it. We're going to take it as is.
Yeah.
But instead, they stepped in and said, no, you need to, this needs to be awarded in this category that you go by so that you can make sure that Rutgers gets a fair evaluation and not have it skewed, but based on a controversy. That's always, whenever you have subjective things like that, it's always an issue. So Selection Sunday coming up on, let's see, on Friday? Is that when Selection Sunday is? I'm trying to think what day of the week it comes on.
Selection Sunday?
Yeah, is it Saturday night?
I think it's next Thursday.
Yeah.
Or no, next Tuesday. Don't they usually release it right before the play-in games?
They do, right as soon as everybody goes to Dayton and then everybody has to leave. Only four teams get to stay.
Eight teams, because there's four games.
Now, and then that always comes. I feel like Selection Sunday, that CBS does this thing where, like, they're at a conference tournament, usually the Big Ten, and there's a couple of conference tournaments that wrap up on Sunday, and then Jim Nance and Grant Hill and whoever's on his team, they just automatically go to Greg Gumbel in New York. They just do this automatic flip, and we jump right into Selection Sunday. And then they go back to Nance and then they evaluate the brackets.
There are five finals on Sunday.
Five of them. So which one is CBS at?
CBS is at the last one, the Big Ten tournament.
The Big Ten. That's the one that I think wraps up.
They'll also be at the Atlantic Ten tournament too.
Okay, so they're going to be at the Atlantic Ten, but yeah, Nance and his team is at the Big Ten.
But you got Ivy League, you got SEC, Atlantic Ten, American Athletic Conference.
Is the SEC still early?
SEC is like at 12 noon.
Yeah, that's right. They usually wrap that thing up quickly. The Big Ten goes until the Big Ten's usually the one that goes to the very end, and then boom,
now,
right to the selection.
Here's something to consider, because the Big Ten starts at 2:30.
Right.
The final. The American Athletic Conference starts at 2:15.
Oh, okay.
So you may not be able to gauge a winner yet.
The AAC, which Houston is in.
Yeah, and there's a couple of good teams in there. Yeah,
a couple of good teams in there. Memphis is in there.
How do they throw it directly? Do they know everyone? It's like, well, okay, if Houston wins, they'll be this seed. If Memphis wins, they'll be this seed. I mean, do they know that ahead of time? Like, we're just going to put them here?
I think Saturday they go, okay, who are left on the board?
Have the graphic
and then
ready.
Let's have it ready to go based on these scenarios. And then they just pencil them in. That's fantastic. Selection Sunday is so fun, but when I was younger, I used to try to write in the teams, and then I just stopped. I'm like, you know what? I'll just print this stupid thing out. I don't need to write in. What am I trying to keep up with this for?
Yeah.
I don't need to write it in. Well, I couldn't print it out back when I was a kid. I just, like you said, I just waited for the insert from the paper.
Oh, all the time.
Or I used to cut it out from the paper. These are the two things.
Yeah,
Sometimes they give you a nice But sometimes you'd have to cut it out of the newspaper.
Nah, because if you printed it out, I didn't know how to adjust the size so it would fit on a sheet of paper. Then you had to tear off the little outside parts.
Right.
Because when it printed, it took forever. And it had those little circle, remember, like the the little circle things on the end?
Yes, that's
right.
You had
to rip off because that's how it rolled through.
Exactly.
Dating ourselves here.
All of these car companies that would promote the beautiful colored insert.
Swear
of
to
magazine.
God, they still use those car companies. They're the
rip
only
it out,
printer.
Post it
ones
up.
Left.
My brother and I played Nerf basketball once in 1986. We had a Nerf tournament in our room where we did the entire NCAA tournament playing Nerf basketball
okay.
to 10. So the game was to 10, and we would pick a team, and we played. We took pieces of paper, we put it on my wall, and we put in the brackets to get a champion at the end.
And so is that how you determined a winner?
Yeah, that's how we played Nerf basketball forever. That's a lot of basketball games.
It is.
That was 64 games, 63 games we played in basketball. It was so fun, though. It was so fun. The reason I remember the 1986 Final Four and where it was because when we made our little fun at-home bracket, I put on it, Welcome to Reunion Arena. When we got to the Final Four, we had a banner. We put a banner in the room that said, Welcome to Reunion Arena in Dallas. And that's how I remember that. So, by the way, if somebody lives in that house, now, I don't know who lives in that house, but down in my room, on top of the ceiling, in a little place where the ceiling comes in, I put the final score of our championship game and the date and circled it. Somebody's going to see that and go, what the hell is that? Yeah, well, it's us playing the playing out the 86 Final Four in Nerf basketball. It's Wake Up Call.